The interviews were good ones. I cool-girled the exes into opening up about stuff they never planned on spilling. None of it is any use to me. I walk back to my car through wide, cold hush, the sound of wind in long grass building up from farther away than I can see, rolling in across the empty fields, over me and on. Normally it would make me edgy, too much nature gives me the creeps. But at last my head has the wiped clean clarity I was looking for in my run this morning. For the first time in days, maybe months, I can think. I can't shake the feeling that it's because I've run Steve out of it. Without him at my elbow, tugging and yammering and pointing in every direction, peppering me with bits of babble that might or might not mean something, and I have to figure out which, I finally have room to see straight. Under all that, all the maybes and the mirages, there are only two things worth seeing. Rory Fallon, the sad little wimp. He's it. All there is to this case. That's why he keeps spitting up great clots of nothing, because there's nothing else to find. And the second thing, this is my last case in murder. I can outmaneuver Breslin and McCann and Roach and the whole Foeman mob for one more day, one more week, one more month. But sooner or later, I'm going to put a toe wrong, and they'll have me. I think of a boxer ducking and weaving away from every punch faster and faster till one blink and bang, blackness. I'm not going to wait for the knockout, give Breslin or Roach or whoever the chance to do his smirking lap of honour around me. I'm going on my own terms. I'll finish this case and finish it right. Tie Rory Fallon down so tight the best defence barrister in the country couldn't wriggle him free. Go out with my head up. Then I'll ring my mate with the security firm and ask him if that job is still on the table. And somewhere in there, I'm going to tell O'Kelly to fuck himself and punch Roach's teeth in. For a second I wonder whether, while I was getting everything else arseways, I could have got Steve wrong. I wonder, not that it matters now, if this is what he was trying to distract me from all along. If he didn't want me to notice that I was done. If the poor, optimistic Egypt actually liked working with me, just like I thought. If he had the same sappy daydreams, us taking down some Hannibal Lecter together without breaking a sweat, shooting our cuffs, and swapping a nod and striding off to the next uncrackable case that needed the best of the best. The twinge that gives me is sharp enough that I hope I'm wrong. The car is cold. Even after I slam the door, I can still hear that unceasing roll of wind through too much grass. Part of me wants to floor it out of there, but I can't think of anything I'm in a hurry to reach. When I get back to the incident room, Steve is still gone. The floaters are eating lunch and bitching about some news story, bitching about cops. Breslin is at his desk, with his chair tilted back and his feet up, finishing a sausage roll and flicking through the courier. Ah, he says, bringing his chair legs down and tossing his paper on the desk. When he sees me, just the woman I've been waiting for. Been doing anything interesting? Aisling's axes, I say, peeling my coat off. Nothing worth hearing. We'll check the alibis and cross them off the list. The courier's front page headline says, "Who was coming to dinner?" Someone's told Crowley about Aisling's date. Breslin swings his feet off his desk. "I need to stretch my legs after that," he says, patting his stomach. "Let's go for a stroll. I've got notes to type up." "They can wait." Lower. "I've got something that can't." Maybe he's going to offer to cut me in on his imaginary sideline. I don't bother putting much thought into whether to play along, seeing as it doesn't matter either way. And his way gets me out of that incident room. "Why not?" I say, and enjoy the flick of surprise on his face as I turn around and head back out the door. "So, I talked to Rory's axes," Breslin says, on our way down the corridor. I wonder where we're going for his chat. It's hit me this week, for the first time, how little privacy we all have from each other. People come and go in the canteen, squad room, the locker room. The interview rooms have observation windows and audio feeds. I never realised before how you would need the squad to be part of you, close and reliable as your own body, in order to survive it. And, I say, Breslin grins. How did he put it? His usual type is more casual than Aisling. I'm sure they're all very nice girls, but my God, I wanted to march the whole lot of them into some makeover show and tell the stylists to bring out the heavy artillery. He heads down the stairs at a jog. You know those god-awful hairy ethnic hoodies that students used to wear back in the 90s to show you they were planning on going backpacking in Goa someday? I swear, the last ex was actually wearing one of those. They give us anything? Yes and no. All of them say Rory was a perfect little gentleman. Never hit them, never yelled at them. No controlling behaviour, no jealous rages. No turning nasty when he didn't get his way, none of that. He turns down the corridor and cracks the door of Incident Room E. The shitty ex-locker room. Empty. In here. He holds the door for me. I get the message. In here. Where I would be already if it wasn't for Breslin helping me out. The place is hot and still stinks of sweaty gym gear. The tiny whiteboard is stained where someone used the wrong kind of marker, and all the chairs look sticky. I don't sit down. But here's the interesting part, Breslin says, closing the door behind us. Two of the exes, including the most recent ones, say they dumped Rory because he was too intense. One girl's exact words were too full on. The other one said he was taking things way too quickly. I thought she was being coy, but it turned out she wasn't talking about sex. She had no problem shagging his brains out on the second date. God bless her. The young people nowadays don't know how good they've got it. So what was she talking about? Basically, by the time they'd been seeing each other for a few months, Rory was starting to think this was some great epic romance, while the girl was still deciding whether she even wanted a serious relationship. She says she really liked him, but she was only 24. She was just looking for a few laughs and some intellectual conversation. She's doing a PhD in Russian literature, with plenty of sex thrown in. She wasn't ready for someone who kept talking about how amazing it would be to go around the world together. Breslin examines the wall by the door, flicks away a speck of something and leans against it. So, she dumped him. The other girl said the same thing, give or take. I keep hearing how women are dying for a guy who's not scared of commitment, but looks like Rory might be a little too much of a good thing. According to Aisling's second ex, when the relationship started getting real, she was out of there, although she blamed that on the sick ma. So when Rory told us him and Aisling fell madly in love at first sight, I say, that doesn't mean Aisling felt the same way. Exactly. Remember what he said about their date at Passel? Every time he thought they were getting on like a house on fire, she'd go quiet on him, and he'd have to kickstart the conversation again. Now that sounds to me like the other side of the story. If only we could hear it, we'd go, he kept getting way too intense, but hey, he's a nice guy, so I tried to give him every chance. The only thing is, I say, that doesn't fit with what the best mate told us. She was positive that Aisling was head over heels. And those texts on Aisling's phone about how excited she was, getting ready for Rory to come over. There's no hint anywhere that she was backing away. If Rory was full on, Aisling was fine with that. Breslin pulls out his phone, which is the size of his head, and in a flashy stainless steel case, and spins it in his hand. He says, I've got to admit something here. I've been going back and forth all morning on whether to share this with you or not. Yesterday I might have bitten. Instead, I keep my mouth shut and wait. When he realises I'm not going to beg, he sighs, spinning the phone again. Light flashes off it in oily grey streaks. I'm a team player, basically. People have this idea of me as some high achiever, but I'm actually a big believer in teamwork. But that only flies if the other people on your team are working the same way. Do you get where I'm going here, Conway? I say, I'm thick. Go ahead and spell it out for me. Breslin pretends to think that over. The heat and the stench are inflating into a solid thing pressing in on us. You're sure you want to hear this? You're the one who says you've got something to tell me. Yeah, I'm positive. I want you to just spit it out instead of wiggling around it, dropping hints. Breslin sighs again. Okay, he says, as a big favour. Here you go. You go into every interaction treating the other person like your enemy. Now, we both know in some cases you've got decent reasons for that. But even when you've got no reason at all, you're straight into attack mode. That creates an atmosphere where even the most dedicated team player is going to think twice before he shares anything with you. In other words, it's my fault he's been concealing evidence from the lead D. Even if there was still a reason to play along, I've got nothing left to do with it. Spit it or don't, I say. If you're not going to, then tell me so I can type up my notes. He stares me out of it. I can't even be arsed giving him a stare back. He's going to tell me he's only dying to. He's just seeing what he can wring out of me in exchange. Conway, he says, putting in all the ferocious patience he can fit. Do you take my point here? At least tell me you get my point. Yeah, I'm a bitch. I knew that already. I moved to go. All right, Breslin says, smooth but fast. I guess I've got to know you well enough this week that I can take the rest as read. Whatever. Our boy Riley. Remember how he was pulling CCTV footage for Stony Batter? After a moment, I take a step back, away from the door. Well, Breslin says, with a touch of a smile to show we're buddies again. Riley's turned out to be a bit of a bright spark. While he was at it, he pulled the last 4 weeks, or as much as he could get. Some places had taped over it, and he stayed until 5 this morning with his finger on the fast forward button. The slithery fuck, I say. He better have a very good reason why I'm hearing this from you, not from him. Oh, well, I'm going to ask you to cut the kid some slack there. I get the feeling you wanted to impress me. Breslin almost manages to hold back the fat, self-satisfied smirk. No harm in that. Get in a few more years on the squad and you'll have newbies flexing their guns for you too. I get the message. If you last another few years. I say, what did he get? Here's a taster, Breslin says. This is just a quick clip I shot off the monitor. There's more where it came from. He swipes, taps and holds out the phone to me. I take it. Fuzzy colour footage. But I'm in the shop often enough that I recognise it straight away. Tesco on Prussia Street. And I recognise the skinny guy taking a bottle of Lucozade out of the fridge and bringing it over to the self-checkout. The delicate profile, the angle of the head, the slight hunch to the shoulders, the drifting way his hands move. I spend hours focusing on every detail of him just 2 days ago. I say, that's Rory Fallon. Him or his clone. And have a look at this. Breslin leans in, pinches the screen bigger and homes in on the timestamp. 9:08 p.m. 14th of the 1st, 2015. 2 weeks back. I say, Rory told us he had to look up the nearest Tesco on his phone. Saturday night. He did. He also gave us the very definite impression that he'd never been to Stony Batter before. On the screen, Rory scoops his change out of the checkout machine and glances around. For a second, he looks straight into the camera, his eyes blurred and wide and intent, stare like he can see me staring back. But like I said, this is just the tip of the iceberg. We've got him within a few minutes' walk of Aisling's house at least three other times this month. His car went past a camera on Manor Street last Thursday evening. He bought his Sunday paper in the corner shop on the 11th of January. And he had a pint in Hanlon's on the 5th. Rory squirming when we talked about his side trip to Tesco. I thought it was the timeline that was making him twitchy. But it was a lot more than that. Rory hadn't needed to look up local shops on his phone. He already knew them by heart. And that's not counting the times Riley didn't spot, and the times that didn't get caught on CCTV, and the times more than 4 weeks ago. Resin takes his phone back. Talk about too full on, he says. Rory's been stalking Aisling. I say, looks like it. He wasn't bringing nutritious meals to Stony Batter senior citizens. Anything innocent, he would have told us by now. He slides the phone into his pocket. Now, wasn't that worth sticking around for? I'm going to have a chat with Riley, I say. Then I want to see the rest of that footage. Then I'll pull Rory back in and I'll see what he's got to say. Why don't we make that we, you and I? We'll see what he's got to say. I'm okay on my own, thanks. Resin's eyebrows go up on that. On your own? What about Moran? He's out. Uh-huh, Breslin says. You're making him shake his trees by himself now, yeah? I thought your patience was wearing thin, all right. Moran's well able to take care of business on his own. He doesn't need me to hold his hand. Breslin's scanning me, amused. He says, I could have told you that you and Moran weren't right for each other. I say, I didn't ask. Give that kid a dozen witnesses and a DNA match and a video of the murder going down, and he'd spend the next year making totally, positively sure that the scumbag didn't have a long-lost twin, and the witnesses weren't confused, and no one spit in the DNA, just in case. I'm not knocking it. There are cases that need that approach. But you, on the other hand, you want to get stuff done.
I do, yeah. That's why I'm going to sort out Riley and have a look at that footage. Instead of having the chats about life in here. See you later.
Jesus Christ, Conway. Can you unbunch your panties just for 1 minute? I'm on your side here. You keep acting like I'm the enemy. I don't know where you got that idea, but I'd like to put it to bed.
Breslin, I say, I appreciate you showing me the footage and all that shite. But I'm going to assume anyone on this squad is the enemy. Unless I've got stone-cold proof that he's not. I'm pretty sure you can understand why.
Oh, yeah, Breslin says.
He cracks the door and checks the corridor. No one there. I understand exactly why. In fact, I understand a lot better than you do. Do you want to know the story I heard about you?
He thinks he sounds tempting, I say.
Why don't you just assume it was all bollocks and we'll go from there?
I do assume it's all bollocks. But you still need to hear it.
I've made it 32 years without giving a shite about other people's bitching. I think I can manage a while longer.
No, you can't.
Every time you walk into the squad room, when you think you're just checking your email and drinking coffee, this story is what the lads are hearing in their heads. As far as they're concerned, this is who you are.
And how's that working out for you?
He wants to tell me the story badly. Him and McCann have worked hard to make me think he's just a big-hearted guy. But that kind of offer. Here, let me take a chunk of your life and rewrite it my way. That never comes out of the goodness of anyone's heart. I say, when I need a hand, I let you know.
It'll sting. I'm not going to lie to you.
Breslin has his sympathetic face on. But I've seen it before, in interview rooms.
I can see why you might not want to deal with that.
I don't. I don't want to deal with anything except my cases. And I want that word at Riley. I go for the door, but Breslin stretches out an arm to block my way. You had a run-in with Roach your first week, he says. Remember that?
Barely. Old news.
Except it's not. You underestimated Roach. Not long after, he told us that back when you were in uniform, you fucked up big time. You were supposed to be guarding some drug dealer while your partner did a sweep of his house. You took off the cuffs so the suspect could go behind a hedge and take a piss, and he did a legger. Then you told your partner, Roach didn't name names, he's too smart for that, that if he put anything in the report, you'd have him up for sexual assault, claim he'd been grabbing your tits in the patrol car. Breslin lowers his arm and takes one deliberate step to the side, out of my way. I don't move, just like he knew I wouldn't. When your partner wrote you up anyway, he says, you followed through, went to your gaffer, the shit hit the fan. The report got rewritten your way. Your partner stuck in blue for the rest of his career, and you got 3 weeks paid leave to recover from the trauma of it all. Is any of this sounding familiar? The 3 weeks I spent being Fleaz's cousin. And before that, there was a suspect. Some idiot off his face on speed. I don't even remember his name. That's how big an impression the whole thing made. Who did a runner on me and my partner. My partner was a good guy, in the uninspired way that stamps blue for life on your forehead from your first day. Roach did his research. Made sure the story tasted of truth just enough that people would swallow it whole. Breslin says, about half the squad believes it. And they want you gone, ASAP, before you pull the same shite on one of them. They're very, very serious about it. He's watching me under his eyelids for a tear, a tremor, a sign that I want to kick Roach's teeth out the back of his skull. I was right, I say. I could have survived just fine without knowing that. Thanks, though. I'll keep it in mind. That snaps his eyes open. You're taking this very lightly, Conway. Roach is a shitball. That's not exactly breaking news. What do you want me to do? Faint? Cry? It wasn't an easy choice, telling you this. I'm a very loyal person. There are plenty of people who would see this as a betrayal of the squad. And this squad means a lot to me. I want you to at least show a little appreciation for what I've done here. Another minute, and he'll have himself worked into a full froth of outrage, and I'll have that to clean up before I can go back to business. I appreciate it, I say. I do. I just don't get why you're telling me. Because someone needs to. Your partner should have done it months ago. Come on, Conway. Of course Moran knows. You think Roach let him get through his first week without cornering him to tell him what he hooked up with? He's still scanning for a reaction. Cold, hungry cop eyes above the touch of smirk. Breslin's aiming to end this chat with me sobbing my little heart out or punching walls or both. All the energy he's putting into it, what a waste. Your partner's supposed to have your back. We wouldn't need to have this conversation if he'd done his bloody job. I say, maybe he didn't see any reason why I needed to know. What the hell? Of course you fucking need to know. You need to know now. No, fuck that. You needed to know months ago. You're on your last legs here. Are you getting this, Conway? Breslin's leaning in, too close, the hulking loom he uses on suspects, wobbling on the edge of a confession. You've still got a shot, but it's your last. If you pull your head out of your arse and quit treating me like the enemy, then we'll have this case put to bed by the end of the week. I'll be able to vouch for you in the squad room, and my word actually carries a fair bit of weight there. And then, if you can manage to act civil to the lads, then you'll be sorted, and you'll be an asset to the squad. And like I said, that means something to me. But if you keep blocking me because you've got some martyr complex going on, then this case is going to go to shit, and I'm not going to be on your side anymore, because I don't like being associated with cases that have gone to shit. And then, not to put too fine a point in it, you're fucked. He leans back against the wall again, sticking his hands in his pockets. It's your call. The knight in shining armour, all ready to rescue me if only I would let him. I don't get rescued. I'll take help. No problem. Just like I took it off Gary and off Fleas. Rescue. Where you're sinking for the third time. You've tried everything you've got and none of it's enough. Rescue is different. If someone rescues you, they own you. Not because you owe them. You can sort that with enough good favours or bottles of booze dressed up in ribbons. They own you because you're not the lead in your story anymore. You're the poor struggling loser, helpless damsel, plucky sidekick who was saved from danger, dishonour, humiliation by the brilliant, brave, compassionate hero, heroine. And they get to decide which. Because you're not the one running this story. Not anymore. I had Breslin wrong all the way. He's not out to sink me. Not necessarily. He's out to own me. This is what McCann was softening me up for, with his salvaged statement sheet and his heart of gold routine. Maybe Breslin has some squad split in the works, him against Roach, and he's building up his team. Maybe he's got a hint that the gaffer is putting in his papers. The golden boy would know. And he figures bringing the bad girl into line would boost his chances for the job. Maybe he's got nothing specific lined up, just figures I'm an easy opportunity, and I'll come in useful somehow down the line. I could laugh, if I had the energy. I'm not going to come in useful to anyone. Not on this squad. Breslin taps his phone pocket. Conway, he says, more gently. I didn't have to share this with you, remember? I could have just pulled Rory and myself and gone at him solo. I'm sharing because I think it's better for everyone if you and I work together. Better for the case, for the squad, for you, and yeah, better for me. He smiles, putting in just the right balance of fatherly warmth and professional respect. Let's face it, Conway. You and I, we make a good team. We did nice work together on Rory Sunday afternoon. With this, the phone pocket again. We can do a lot better. I'm gearing up to tell him where to stick his rescue effort. When I realise, it doesn't matter. I don't have to worry about Breslin rescuing me, owning me, sinking me, any of that fancy crap. Whatever he has in mind for me, I won't be here for it. He's right. We're good together. And all of a sudden I'm free to use that, without going into a tailspin about consequences like Rory bloody Fallon himself. This quitting thing is fun. I wish I thought of it months ago. Okay, I say, let's do it. But we don't bring up that footage till I give the word. I want to save that. No problem, you call it. Breslin grins at me. This is going to be a lot of fun, Conway. When we show Rory this, he's going to wet his frilly knickers. It's better than that, I say. Breslin raises a questioning eyebrow. We've been looking for a motive, or at least something, that could have triggered the attack, right? Breslin blows air out of one corner of his mouth. Well, you have. I still don't actually care why he did it, as long as we can show that he did it. Rory gets over to Aisling's place, I say, all amped up for the big night. He's a bit early. But that's no big deal. She lets him in. They're delighted to see each other. And then somehow the stalking comes out. Maybe he lets something slip that tells Aisling he knows Stony Batter. Or maybe she mentions having seen him around the area and he doesn't cover it fast enough. It feels good coming up with a story. I can see why everyone's so hooked on it. I've got the whole scene playing out in front of me like another video clip. But one I can tweak and nudge till everything about it suits me right down to the ground. Either way, Aisling's not happy. She's already been having doubts about how full-on Rory is. She dismissed those, but this takes him over the line into wacko territory. She tells him to leave, and he loses the head. Breslin has his lips pursed and he's nodding away.
I like this, he says. I like it a lot, Conway. I think you're onto something here. I knew there was a reason I had faith in you.
I say, let's see what Rory thinks of it. Breslin smiles at me, a great big warm smile like I'm the best thing he's seen in months.
Come on, he says, let's get out of here. This place stinks.
I could drink the air in the corridor in one swallow after that snot we've been breathing. Breslin shuts the incident room door behind us with a neat, contemptuous slam that says,
you won't be needing this place anymore.
Back in the incident room, I ring Rory and ask him, all friendly and casual, if he would mind giving us a hand by coming in for another quick chat. I'm all ready to knock down a bunch of excuses about how he can't leave the shop and he's got an appointment and he doesn't feel well. But he falls over himself agreeing to come in straight away. He's just desperate to prove he's on our side. But I'm so unused to things being easy that it feels unnatural, almost creepy. Like the world has slid a notch sideways and won't click back to reality. I want sleep. A lot of it. Steve is still out. I catch some autopilot part of me actually hoping he'll show up before Rory does. I'll have to start off the interview with Breslin, what with him bringing me that footage. But I can swap Steve in before we get to the final push. We'll get a confession off Rory, show that ditzy fool Steve that I was right all along. He'll apologise, and we'll go for a pint, and everything will go back to normal. This is when my brain catches up and remembers that things aren't going back to normal. Not ever again. The incident room lurches, light jumping and stuttering, the hum of the computers rising like sirens. When I beckon Riley over to my desk, he doesn't even bother faking an apology. Just puts on a blank pig face and stares over my shoulder, waiting for me to be done. I was all geared up to take his head off, but looking at that face barely hiding a sneer, all I can think of is Steve. Steve on that old case years back, getting that key piece of info and pinning it to his lapel instead of bringing it home to the lead D. Riley makes me sick. I don't want him ripped to pieces anymore. All I want is him out of my sight. When I tell him to go back to the floater pool, his face, sneer slapped right off, raw born of anger and humiliation rising. Doesn't even give me a drop of satisfaction. The other floaters pretend they're concentrating on work while he gathers up his stuff and leaves, slamming the door on his way out. Breslin lounges at his desk and watches me, eyes hooded, pen between his teeth, all ready to tell me whether I've done the right thing or not. I don't ask. The footage shows exactly what Breslin said it did. Rory, wandering around Stony Batter when he shouldn't have been. I send Mean to head over there, pull all the December CCTV footage you can get, there won't be much left, and start watching. Then I pick out the best shots of Rory with timestamps and print them off. The phone on my desk rings. Bernadette, to say Rory Fallon is downstairs. He's here, I say to Breslin.
Let's do it, he says, shoving his chair back. See you later, boys. We'll bring you back a nice scalp.
The floaters glance up and nod too quickly, scared I'll rip the throat out of anyone who makes eye contact. On my monitor, a blurry black and white Stony Batter street moves and jumps. Runner frozen in one corner of the screen, teleported to the opposite side in a blink. Alsatian caught in mid-piss, then vanished till I hit stop. The computers and the whiteboard and the floaters billow and shrink around the edges like thin fabric underwater, drifting farther away all the time. Chapter 12. Rory is in even worse shape than he was on Sunday. His hair still has that plaster down look, his eyes are bloodshot, and his skin is a dry, clothy white. He smells of clothes left too long in the washing machine. A smile jerks up on his face when he sees us, but it's a reflex, jittery and mechanical. We're going to have fun getting him chilled out enough to be useful. We start by taking him to the nice interview room, the one for shaking up witnesses and victims' relatives. It's cute. Pastel yellow paint, chairs that don't hate you, a kettle and a hotel-style basket of tea bags and itty-bitty sachets of instant coffee. My first interview room, we call it. Even through his jitters, Rory feels the difference. He relaxes enough to take off his second-best coat and hang it tidily over the back of his chair. Underneath, he has on jeans and a baggy beige jumper that's 20 quid's worth of knitted depression. "Let's get through the paperwork first," Breslin says, sliding a rights sheet and a pen across the table. Since Chief Jock is the intimidating one, he's armed with a big file bursting with everything that could come in useful, plus random paper for padding. Cool Girl is on Rory's side deep down, so I've got nothing but my notebook and my pen. "Sorry about this, I know you've already done it, but we need a new one of these every time." "You are not obliged to say anything unless you wish to do so, but anything you do say will be taken down in writing and may be given in evidence. Just like last time. Is that all okay?" Rory signs without reading. "Thanks," Breslin says, through a yawn and a peck display stretch. "I need real coffee, not that instant rubbish. Rory, Antoinette, what'll I get you?" Normally I'd smack down the Antoinette crap, but I know what he's at. "Oh God, yeah, real coffee," I say. "Black, no sugar. And see if you can find a couple of biscuits, would you? I'm starving." "I'll raid O'Gorman's sash," Breslin says, grinning. "He buys the good stuff, no rich tea nonsense there. Rory, what'll you have?" A baffled blink while Rory tries to chase down the potential implications of hot drinks. "Tea would be, no, coffee with a bit of milk, please." "Your wish is my command," Breslin says, and hauls himself out of his chair with a groan. "I could sleep for a week. It's this bloody weather. One decent bit of sunshine and I'd be a new man." "Have a look through O'Gorman's desk while you're at it," I say. "See if he's got a couple of tickets to Barbados in there. If he does, we're out of here." "Rory, got your passport?" Rory manages to catch up and find a laugh, a few seconds too late. Breslin throws us both a grin on his way out the door. I lean back in my chair, stretching out my legs in front of me, and pull out my hair elastic to redo my bun while we wait. "Oof," I say. "Long few days. How have you been getting on?" "Okay. It's a lot to take in." Rory's on guard. He hasn't forgotten that I'm the mean cop who didn't tell him Aisling was dead. Steve would have had him cozy and chatting in no time. Steve isn't the only one who can play nice. "It is, all right," I say. "Do you want me to set you up with victim support? Find you someone you can talk to? That's their job, helping people through this kind of thing. They're good." "No, thanks."
"You sure?"
"Yes, I'll be fine. What I really need is to know what happened. I need to know that."
"Well, yeah," I say, with a rueful grin. "Don't we all?" Rory risks a fast glance at me.
Do you know yet?" I sigh and give my head a massage while I have the hair down. "To be honest with you, no, we don't. We followed a load of lines of investigation, and I can't go into details, but basically none of them are taking us anywhere. That's why we're calling back the people who are closest to Aisling. We're hoping someone will be able to give us a fresh idea, kickstart things." Rory says, still wary, "I'd only known her a couple of months." "I know, yeah, but a connection like you and Aisling had, that counts more than years of sitting next to her in work and chatting about internet kitty pics." I get the tone right. No syrup, just direct and clean and matter of fact. "You understood her. That was obvious last time we talked. You weren't just seeing some blonde with a face full of fancy makeup. You saw straight through all that. You saw who she really was, Rory says quietly.
That's what it felt like.
That's valuable, man. Me, I'm never going to meet Aisling. I'm relying on people like you to show me who she was. That's how we'll figure out what could have happened to her.
I've forgotten all about putting my hair back up. Too earnest about this conversation. Too far into off-duty chat mode. And I'd say you've thought about nothing else the last couple of days. Am I right?
Rory bites at his lips. After a moment.
More or less, yes.
And the last couple of nights?
A nod.
Hang in there, I say gently.
I know what it's like. At first it feels like it's taken over your whole life, yeah? And you're never going to get your head above water again.
The breath and the wariness go out of Rory together. His shoulders fall forward. He pushes his fingers up under his glasses to rub at his eyes.
I haven't slept. I don't do well with no sleep, but I can't. I've just been walking up and down my living room hours and hours. My legs are killing me. Late last night, something happened in the street outside, a man shouting, and I thought I was having a heart attack. I genuinely thought I was going to die, right there, leaning against my wall. I haven't been able to open the shop. I haven't been able to go out of my flat in case I make a fool of myself by fainting if someone slams a car door.
He gives me a glance that's meant to be defiant.
I suppose you think that's pathetic.
I do, but even more, I think it's going to be useful.
Me? I say, startled. Jesus, no. I've seen a lot of people go through this.
The way you're feeling, that's par for the course.
When you rang, I was actually relieved, do you know that? Which is obviously ridiculous, but all I could think was that now I don't have to spend the day.
His voice wavers. He presses his fingertips to his mouth.
You're doing me a favour too, I say, with just the right amount of sympathy in the smile.
In this weather, I'm a lot happier in here than out doing door to door.
All I can do is think about it, how it might have happened. I've come up with dozens of scenarios. That's why I can't sleep. When I close my eyes, those are all I can see.
Thank Jesus, I say, heartfelt. And when Rory looks up, eyes widening.
That's what we do, yeah? We come up with theories on how this could have happened, and then we try to match them to the facts.
Only this time, none of them are matching, and I have to admit, I've run out of theories. I've been going mental trying to come up with more.
So if you've got any new ones, then for Jesus' sake, throw them my way.
That would give Steve a laugh. Me, begging for all the if, then, maybe fantasy crap this guy can dish out.
The thought of Steve jabs me up under the ribs hard enough to mess up my breath.
Rory manages a small, tugged-down smile.
How long have you got?
Tell you what, start with your best shot, the one that deep down you think is actually what happened. And if it's any good, Jesus, I'll owe you big time. And if it doesn't fly, and that fella's still not back with the coffee, you can throw the next one at me.
He looks at me like I might be setting him up for some point and laugh joke.
Seriously?
Of course, seriously, I say.
I told you we rang you because we need all the help we can get. Anything you've got is better than a load of nothing.
Unless you figure it was like aliens.
This time the smile is almost real.
No aliens, Rory says, I promise.
I sit up and pull out my notebook, ready to catch the pearls of wisdom.
Well, this is the one I keep coming back to. The thing about Aisling, saying her name makes him flinch. He takes off his glasses and polishes them, turning me and the room blurry and soft, easy to talk to.
The thing you have to understand about Aisling, he says, is that she was the kind of person who made you daydream. When you were with her, you found yourself coming up with stories.
His back is straightening already. I've got him on home ground.
I wondered if it was because she was a daydreamer herself.
I could tell she was. It takes one to know one, but it was more than that. It was because she didn't mind slipping into your daydream, coming along for the ride. She liked it.
which sounds like a load of bollocks to me. No one likes being turned into a bit part in someone else's fantasy. If that reaches my face, Rory can't see it, not with his glasses off, but he says, like he heard me thinking. She did. Just to give you an idea, when we went for dinner, I said to her that it felt like we'd known each other for years. Aisling said yes, she felt the same way. She said something like, maybe we did meet somewhere along the way. It's a small country. So I said, maybe we played together when we were little, 6 maybe, in a playground in autumn. Maybe you'd brought your doll along. Aisling was smiling, and she said she always did bring her doll to the playground, a grubby old thing called Caramel. So I said, maybe you put Caramel down on a bench so she could watch you on the swings. And I was on the swing next to yours. And then another little girl came along and thought Caramel had been abandoned and picked her up. Remembering the doll's name would have been adorable in the groom's speech. In this context, it's well over the line into creepy. Rory's smiling faintly back at the Aisling in his memory. I told her the whole story. The two of us saw the other little girl taking Caramel away, so we escaped from our families and followed her and her mother onto a bus and all the way into town, running after her down O'Connell Street, into Cleary's. I said a guard went after us, but we dodged and hid inside a huge umbrella, and we foiled a pickpocket by tripping him up with the point of the umbrella. It turned out that the pickpocket had just robbed the little girl's mother's wallet, and they were so grateful to us. The little girl didn't even mind giving Caramel back to Aisling, and she and her mother brought us home in a horse-drawn carriage.
Holy Jesus. By this time, I would have been out of the restaurant and halfway home, on the phone to my mate Lisa, breaking my shite laughing and swearing off relationships for life.
I see what you mean about the date going great guns, I say, smiling away. That must have been lovely.
It was. I'm sure it sounds silly, but at the time it felt.
His chin goes up defiantly. It felt magical. As if the whole thing had actually happened, but somehow we'd both forgotten, and telling the story was bringing it to life again. Aisling was laughing, adding in bits of her own. She kept saying, we must have been starving. Maybe the man at the donut kiosk in O'Connell Street gave us donuts. And maybe a dog almost sniffed us out under the umbrella, and we threw a bit of donut to make it go away. Like I said, she was happy with me making up stories around her. She encouraged it. She brought it out in people.
He makes it sound like the whole thing was as unthinking and cute as a smile. Just Aisling skipping along among the daisies, scattering happy daydreams wherever she went. I'm not so sure. I think of her in Missing Persons that day, pelting me with everything that should have started my mind wandering off down stories, the mystery, the tears, the snippets of info about what her dad had been like, the scraps of childhood reminiscence. If I had bitten, and maybe I would have, if the daddy crap hadn't rubbed me up the wrong way, I would have been a lot more likely to give her what she was after, and then the genius detective solved the poor orphan girl's problem and they all lived happily ever after. It worked on Gary. Aisling knew how to use her knack. She didn't get me. I raise a mental finger at her and say to Rory, and you're thinking that might have something to do with what happened to her. Rory's nodding hard. Yes, yes. The thing about daydreams is that they don't last. One brush up against reality and that's the end of them. I know I must sound ridiculously spacey to someone like you, but I do understand that much. A sudden slice to his voice and a sharp flash of his eyes, gone. Almost too fast to catch, but I was watching. Rory isn't fluffy clouds, an adorable ending straight through. He's got something solid and keen-edged at the centre, just like Aisling. That combination made the two of them a perfect match, and then it turned on them. For someone like me,
Rory says. That's not a problem. I spend half my time in my head anyway. Always have.
I realise that, too.
That edge again.
So when I bang up against reality and it bursts my bubble, that's not the end of the world. I'm used to it. Deep down, I was expecting it all the time.
Which sounds a lot like a sideways explanation for why it couldn't have been me. Honest, detective.
You get them a lot. Mostly you get them from killers.
I nod along, concentrating hard on all these valuable insights.
Rory says, but a lot of people aren't like that. It took me a while to realise. When I was younger, some people spend all their time focused on what's actually happening.
I know what you mean, I say, confidentially.
You get a lot of cops like that. No imagination.
That gets an automatic half smile, but Rory's too deep in his story to pay much attention to me.
So, if a man like that were to run into Aisling, he wouldn't know how to prepare for the fact that his bubble was almost definitely going to burst. And when it did...
I get you, I say, doing a little focused frown.
At least I think I do. Tell me what you're picturing. Specifics.
Rory draws patterns on the table with one fingertip. He says slowly,
I think he was someone who wouldn't even have come onto your radar because he knew Aisling so briefly. They meet in a nightclub, maybe, or through her work, and they get talking. Maybe he gets her phone number and they meet up for a drink, or maybe it never even gets that far. But his mind's already gone wild, spinning stories, and he's intoxicated by the feeling, especially since, to him, it's brand new.
By now, Breslin is waiting in the observation room, rolling his eyes and muttering at me to get a move on, while our coffee goes cold. He can do some deep breathing. If Rory needs all day to talk himself into this, then he's gonna get all day.
And then, for whatever reason, Aisling decides not to go any further with the relationship.
Rory looks up at me. His fingers are pressing down hard on the tabletop.
If you're not used to that reality check, it's devastating. It's like I imagine cold turkey would feel to a heroin addict. Actual physical upheaval, as well as psychological. Your body and your mind floundering.
So he goes after her, I say. Rory shakes his head vehemently.
No, not like that. Someone who would do that, attack a woman just for breaking up with him after an evening or two, that's a monster. A psychopath, and Aisling wouldn't have got involved with a monster to begin with. Just because she enjoyed daydreaming, that doesn't mean she was oblivious to reality. This man must have been a decent guy. Things just got out of control.
Your average innocent guy whose girlfriend's been murdered, he's going to picture the killer as a foaming animal who deserves 7 kinds of electric chair.
Rory can't afford to.
That makes sense, yeah, I say, taking notes and nodding.
So, what does he do?
If he can't be with Aisling, at least he needs more material for the daydreams. Something to feed them. She's mentioned where she works, so he starts hanging around outside there to see her come out. One evening, he follows her home.
Some new charge is revving up underneath Rory's voice, powering it, swelling it.
I don't need to nudge him, not anymore.
And once he knows where she lives, it becomes an addiction. He can't stay away. He tries, but every few days he finds himself straying towards Stonybatter, before he realises he's going to do it. He finds himself wandering around the streets, thinking about her feet touching those same pavements, buying chocolate bars he doesn't want, just to shop where she does. He finds himself outside her house, watching her while she makes cups of herbal tea and does her ironing.
He's keeping close to the truth, staying parallel, almost touching, smart choice. It makes the story ring almost true.
He gets used to it, being out there in the dark, curling his toes to keep them from freezing, watching the light in her windows, imagining himself turning the key in the door and stepping into that warmth, and her coming to kiss him, imagining the two of them cooking dinner together in that bright kitchen. He finds a routine, a kind of equilibrium,
a kind of contentment. He could live like that indefinitely.
Rory has changed. No more timid little gerbil. He's sitting forward, hands moving in fast, clean, confident gestures. That charge under his voice has built till every corner of the room hums with it. For the first time, I can see why Aisling went for him. This shite is the last thing I'd want in a guy. But it's got power. Rory has risen up out of his beige huddle and become someone who would make you turn to look when he came through a door and keep looking. And then, he says, Saturday night, this man went to watch Aisling as usual, but what he saw was different. He saw her all dressed up and made up, glowing like a treasure chest. He saw her making dinner, not just for herself, but for two people. Taking two wine glasses out of the cupboard and bringing them into the sitting room. He saw her singing into her corkscrew, dancing, shaking her hair around and laughing at herself. He saw how happy she was, how she couldn't wait. Getting ready, singing into corkscrew like teenager with hairbrush. That smell of blood soaks the air again. Butcher's shop thick. Rory's imagination is good, but he's not clairvoyant. He was watching Aisling on Saturday night. It would have knocked him breathless. He must have felt like the world was tilting. He must have thought he had believed in that daydream so hard that it had burst its way into reality. He wouldn't have known that's not the way life works. A bitter wrench to one side of Rory's mouth. He would have been sure that somehow Aisling was wearing that dress and cooking that meal for him. And when he could breathe again, he would have stepped out of the dark and wiped the worst of the rain off his coat, and he would have knocked on her door. Nice ending. Rory folds his hands, takes a long breath, and looks at me expectantly. He wants to leave it there. I'm loving this interview, not just because it's going well. I'm loving this interview because it's clean. No ifs and maybes twitching in the corners, gumming up the air, itching inside my clothes. No layers on layers of outside chances and hypotheticals to take into account every time I open my mouth or listen to an answer. Just me and the guy across from me and what we both know he did. It lies on the table between us, a solid thing with the taut dark shine of a meteorite for the winner to claim. I say, and then? Rory's neck twists. When I keep watching him, eyebrows up and inquiring, he says, well, and obviously Aisling wasn't getting ready for him. She was getting ready for me. She hadn't so much as thought about him in months. So she would have been astonished to see him. Presumably she told him to leave, and that's when he snapped. I keep up the inquiring look. And lower to the table. And hurt her. That charge is ebbing out of the room, out of Rory's voice and his face, leaving him wispy and beige again. His lovely story has burst, just like he described, against the gravel-sharp reality of dead Aisling. When the silence keeps going even lower. Killed her. How would he do it? Rory shakes his head. Rory, help me out here. Don't you already know? I'm asking you a favour. I say gently, leaning in to catch his eye. Pretend it's just a made-up story, okay? Like the ones you told Aisling. Just finish it for me. Please. I don't. All I know is he wouldn't have had a weapon with him, a knife or anything. He would never have been planning to, maybe a lamp or something that was already there. He runs a trembling hand across his face. I can't. He's not going to let slip that he knows how she died. No big deal. It was a long shot. Wow, I say. I lean back in my chair, blow out a long sigh and run my hands through my hair. Man, that's some powerful stuff. Is it? Rory catches a deep breath. He pushes his glasses back on and blinks at me, trying to refocus. Could it be useful?
Do you think?
It could, I say. It could well be.
I'm obviously not going to go into the details of what I'm thinking, but there's a chance you could actually have given us something really valuable there.
Thanks for doing that, man.
Thanks a lot.
No problem. Do you think?
Hello, hello, hello. Breslin booms cheerfully, bursting the door open with his backside and swinging in with his hands full of mugs. Sorry I took so long. That shower of uncivilized gits can never be arsed bringing their mugs back to the canteen. Never mind washing them out. I had to chase these down. On the plus side, he hands out the mugs and sweeps a packet of biscuits out of his jacket pocket with a flourish. O'Gorman's stash didn't let me down. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you chocolate-covered Oreos. Who's your daddy?
Ah, you star, I say. I'm only starving.
At your service. Breslin tosses an Oreo to me and one to Rory, who of course fumbles it, drops it on the carpet and has to go after it. He stares at it like he's not sure what it's for.
Get that into you, Breslin tells him, before O'Gorman comes looking.
Come here, I say, dipping my Oreo in my coffee. Rory's got a theory.
Thank Jesus, Breslin says. At least someone has. Any good?
Could be, I say, through most of my biscuit. Long story short, he figures Aisling was the type who could get a guy fantasizing about happy ever afters a lot faster than normal. So there was some guy who Aisling was seeing, so briefly that he hasn't made it onto our radar, and once she dumped him, this guy got in over his head thinking about her, started watching her. When he saw her getting ready for her dinner with Rory, he convinced himself she was waiting for him. Knocked on her door, got a nasty shock when she wasn't happy to see him, and snapped.
Interesting, Breslin says.
He throws his biscuit into his mouth and chews meditatively, considering.
I like it. It could work with a lot of what we know.
Rory doesn't look encouraged. He's huddled in his chair, picking carpet fluff off his Oreo. The second Breslin walked in, he faded and shrank and twisted like a boil-washed jumper. Exactly, I say. It's got that feel, you know? In this job, you learn to recognise when something feels right, practically and psychologically.
We love that feel, Breslin tells Rory. We've been haunting it all week, I've got to admit, my son. Your theory is the nearest we've got to that feel.
We'll get people digging deeper into Aisling's incidental contacts, nightclubs, work connections. If this guy turns up, Rory, we owe you that ticket to Barbados after all. He leans back in his chair and takes a long slurp of coffee, sorting through his file.
Meanwhile, he says, since we're here, you mind clearing up a couple of small things, just so we can cross them off our list?
Ah, Jesus, you and your lists, I say, rolling my eyes. Ignore him, Rory. This guy makes lists of what he puts in his pockets, so he can double check that he hasn't dropped anything.
Don't get sucked in. Get out while you can. Don't knock my list, you, Breslin says, pointing at me. How often have they saved our arses?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Rory, is that cool with you? Just a few more minutes.
We all know Rory's not leaving. Not with nowhere to go but round and round his flat in his head. He says,
I suppose.
See?
Breslin says to me, Rory doesn't mind humouring me. Am I right, Rory?
Yes, I mean, I mind, I say. If I have to put up with one more...
Beautiful, Breslin says. Suck it up, Conway.
He flips paper. I sigh heavily, twisting my hair back into its bun. Business time. Breslin was right. We're good in interviews. It shoves the message home. Working well together means bugger all else. I catch the smooth, cold span of the one-way glass in the corner of my eye and wonder if Steve is behind it.
Ah, Breslin says. Here we go. Lovely list. Question one. Rory.
Saturday evening. Aisling and one of her friends were talking about you calling round for dinner.
Sounds like she was looking forward to it.
He gives Rory a smile, holds it till Rory more or less smiles back.
Sweet. And the friend warned Aisling to...
He
He pretends to check his notes.
Be careful, okay? Why would she do that?
Rory stares, bewildered.
Who said that? Who would you expect to say it?
I wouldn't. I hardly even know any of Aisling's friends who...
Hang on, Breslin says, lifting a hand. You're telling us that if Aisling's friends had known you, they'd have had reason to warn her to be careful. What reason?
No, that's not what I said. They wouldn't have a...
One of them thought she did.
She didn't. None of them had any reason at all.
Must have been a misunderstanding, I say. Was there something the mate could have taken up wrong? A new fella on the scene? Mates can get protective, start seeing red flags everywhere.
Or jealous, Breslin offers. Maybe the friend's a hound. Can't get a fella of her own. She gets her knickers in a knot and decides to spin some little thing to try and put Aisling off you.
What could she have spun?
Rory passes a hand over his eyes and tries to think. He's abandoned his Oreo untouched. He's figured out that we're not playing that game anymore. Me and Breslin are still all smiles, but the air in the room's changed. The pulse is faster and harder, and it's Breslin setting it now, not Rory.
The only thing I can think of... We wait, encouragingly.
I told you last time it was complicated, setting up dates with Aisling. But I kept trying, even when she cancelled. I suppose that could have come across as, I don't know, pushy, I mean. I know Aisling didn't think I was being too pushy, or she would have ended it, but maybe one of her friends might have.
Whoa, Breslin says, slow down. You just said you kept pushing Aisling for dates, even when she cancelled. But then you're telling us if she told you to get lost, you would have gone. Which is it?
But no, that's not the same thing. She never said she didn't want to see me anymore. If she had, then of course I would have gone. Saying I'm busy on Thursday isn't the same. It's completely...
Rory's winding himself into a tangle of indignation and defensiveness.
Hey, you don't need to convince us, I say. The mate's the one who's worried. We're just trying to work out why.
That's the only thing I can think of. That's it.
Breslin gets up from the table and goes for a stroll, giving Rory two places to look. He says,
sounds a bit thin to me.
And me, I say. The friend's not the hysterical type. You know what I mean?
If she thought Aisling needed to be careful, she had a reason.
Maybe. Rory clears his throat. If I'm right about the guy watching Aisling, maybe Aisling had noticed him and mentioned him to her friend, and the friend was worried that he'd get angry about her having me over.
Breslin stops and gives Rory a long, quizzical gaze.
Rory holds it in a blinky way. He says,
did Aisling ever mention an ex who gave her the willies?
Rory shakes his head.
Out loud for the tape.
No, she didn't.
Most women aren't going to bring up the ex to the new boyfriend, I point out. Makes you sound like a bunny boiler.
Breslin shrugs. Fair enough, I guess. She ever mentioned having a stalker? The word makes Rory wince. No.
Not once.
No, but she might not have wanted to. I don't know, scare me off.
What? She thought you'd run a mile just because some rando was hanging around.
Would you have?
No, of course you wouldn't.
And Aisling, not being an idiot, knew that. You think she would have bothered her arse with you if she thought you were that much of a wimp?
Conway, would you want a guy who's scared that easy?
Nah, I say. I like them to have at least one ball.
Exactly.
I'm willing to bet Aisling did too.
Rory's shifting.
Okay, maybe she didn't. She might not have known the guy was watching her.
Maybe not, Breslin says.
He leans in sharply towards the table and Rory flinches, but he's only going for another swig of his coffee.
Maybe not. In which case, we're back where we started. When the friend told Aisling to be careful, she couldn't have been talking about the stalker ex, who's never entered anyone's head but yours.
Except that he did. It twinges like a sore tooth that I thought was fixed, sorted, gone. An ex entered Lucy's head. According to her story, he was part of the reason she sent that text. Breslin puts down his mug with a hard, precise clunk.
So, he asks, what was the friend talking about?
Rory shakes his head. He subsided back into his heap.
Out loud for the tape. I don't know what she meant.
Shame, Breslin says. That could really do with an explanation. But if you're sure you can't help us there.
A small pause for Rory to come in, which he doesn't.
I suppose we can leave it for now. Let's move on down my list, shall we?
He leans over his notes and scans. Ah, he says. That's right, question two. He pulls a piece of paper out of his jacket pocket and unfolds it with a snap that makes Rory's shoulders leap. He has another stroll around the room while he reads down the page, taking his time, wandering behind Rory to make him twist in his chair.
Tell me that's not another list, I say, rolling my eyes at Rory.
No response.
This, Breslin says, tapping the page. This is Rory's timeline for Saturday night.
Rory's shoulders stiffen.
Oh, I say. Yeah, that's not as big a deal as you're making out.
You might be right. Let's find out.
What?
Rory's voice wobbles. He clears his throat and tries again.
What's the problem?
Ah, Breslin says. This is going to get complicated, Rory, so stop me if you're not following. According to you, you got on the 39A just before 7 and got off it in Stonybatter just before 7:30. Walked around to Viking Gardens to make sure of the route. That brings us to, say, 7:32. Headed up to Tesco for flowers. We've timed it at around a 7-minute walk, so you'd have got there by 7:40.
Rory has stopped tracking Breslin's stroll. He's rigid, feet braced on the floor, staring ahead.
Your statement says you spent a couple of minutes in Tesco. Let's say you left around 7:43. Another 7 or 8 minutes to get back to Viking Gardens, maybe less, since you said you were hurrying. You'd have been at Aisling's door by 7:50. Are you with me?
If you're not, I say, get Brez to write it down for you. Make him earn his wages.
Rory says, without looking at me,
I'm following perfectly well.
You are, of course, Breslin says heartily.
Except you told us you got to Aisling's just before 8. What did you do with the extra 8 or 9 minutes?
And his shoulders slacken again. Rory thinks he's off the hook. He's loosening, body and mind, with relief.
I haven't got a clue. I mean, God, maybe I got off the bus a little later than I thought. Or took a bit longer choosing the flowers. Or maybe I reached Aisling's a few minutes earlier than I thought. Or all of those. I don't really notice exact times. I haven't been trained to the way you have. I couldn't tell you within 8 minutes what time it is now, or how long we've been here.
Breslin rubs at his nose, embarrassed.
When you put it like that.
See, I say to both of them, no big deal.
Professional deformation,
Breslin says, with a rueful little laugh at himself. I laugh too. Rory lets out a slightly hysterical half laugh. We all laugh together.
I swear to God, sometimes I think I've forgotten what it's like being normal. I mean, a normal person couldn't lose track of, like, hours, right? Or even half an hour. You couldn't have got to Aisling's house at 8:30 and thought it was 8 o'clock. Like, 10 minutes would be about the limit.
I suppose, Rory says.
He remembers his coffee and takes a quick covert sip.
Probably. Hmm, Breslin says, turning over his piece of paper. I've got another timeline right here. Get more of that coffee down you. You're going to need it.
So am I say, raising my mug to Rory and throwing him a wink.
Hang in there, man.
The list's got to end sometime.
Yeah, yeah. The sooner you two quit bitching, the faster we get through this.
Breslin moves round to my side of the table, getting